Zoom in on global affairs with insightful debates and exclusive interviews. This is World Insight.
Hello, I'm Tian Wei. Welcome to World Insight. Chinese President Xi Jinping has stressed the importance of China-U.S. relations in a meeting with representatives of U.S. businesses and academia in Beijing. He says ties between China and the U.S. is one of the most consequential in the world, and it's built on friendly exchanges between peoples of both countries. He adds China-U.S. relations will stay on a positive track as long as the two sides regard each other with respect as partners. So how could the two nations work more closely on common interests? How are business leaders digesting changes and keeping trade and investment vibrant? My latest exclusive interview with Stephen Ordinz, president of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations, later. China's island province of Hainan rolls out the red carpet for the 2024 Boao Forum for Asia annual conference. It's a good example of how China interacts with the rest of the world. On the forum sidelines, I talked to Ban Ki-moon, the chairman of the Boao Forum for Asia, who's former Secretary General of the United Nations. Our conversation began with the latest ceasefire resolution for Gaza. Mr. Chairman, so good to see you back in Boao.
Great pleasure to see you again, to have this interview with you.
It's wonderful to have this reunion. Now, something very dear to your heart. The United Nations Security Council just adopted a resolution regarding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. You've been emphasizing on the humanitarian situation there. Tell me about your immediate response.
I was relieved when there was a news that this Security Council resolution was adopted by United States abstaining. That was a good, that was the most urgently necessary and needed one. But at the same time, I was a bit confused and angry why the Israeli government criticized the United States for not having boycotted it. I understand that this was the third try by the members of the Security Council. First, the United States vetoed it. Second, it was vetoed by Russia and other countries. Then it was the only third time. Too late. Tens of thousands of people have been, have suffered from this. Millions of people are suffering from lack of food and water and basic humanitarian needs. Therefore, there is no time to lose. They must take action into action. That's what I have been urging all the times. I was a Secretary General when the first Gaza crisis happened in December 2008 and expanding into January. I immediately flew to the region. First, I met Prime Minister Netanyahu at the time, and I met President of Palestine. I met most of the Middle Eastern leaders.
Yes.
I've been shuttling from country to country and four countries in a day, negotiating with them immediate and urgently ceasefire. I was able to draw ceasefire after just a few days of my diplomatic effort. This time it took so long time. Millions of people are suffering. I know that the United Nations is very much limited in providing necessary humanitarian assistance. Therefore, I'm urging the countries of the world provide all necessary humanitarian assistance. First, save lives of all these people who are not responsible for this crisis. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Asia plays a critical role in this very complex and ever-evolving world. As the chairman of Boao Forum for Asia, I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts about that. How is that likely to help build a community of shared future?
There are many important countries and strong and big countries in Asia who have really benefited and who have risen to global powers. China is a very important example of how leadership changes, makes changes in their effort to make the country and the people stronger and richer and wealthier now. Then India is following up. Of course, you know, my own country, Korea, is one of the OECD members. Therefore, the countries such like China should take a leadership role. Already, Chinese President Xi Jinping has declared in 2015 and later on the Global Initiative for Development, Global Initiative for Civilization, and also Security Initiative. Those are all three important initiatives, because when there is no security, you cannot engage in economic development. Without peace, you cannot do anything. Therefore, all these are three interconnected. Therefore, this is a very far-reaching vision. I hope that China, as one of the responsible members of the United Nations and the Security Council permanent members, should exert their efforts to do much more, not only in Middle East and in other parts, like the war in Ukraine.
One hot spot after another, isn't it? Especially when you see half of the world's population going through their national elections. There are a lot of unpredictabilities, to say the least, leading up to the end of this year. Mr. Chairman, your thoughts as the chairman of World Forum for Asia, which is trying to create opportunities out of challenges.
World Forum is now celebrating 24th anniversary. It has been really helping a lot. Meeting with the global leaders, business leaders, and also academicians, working together. World Forum can really help progress in terms of political security and economic development and social integration. I think World Forum for Asia has contributed a lot. But nobody can be satisfied with what we have been doing, because we are now witnessing unprecedented danger and security concerns here and there, everywhere. Therefore, I urge the war between Russia and Ukraine must stop immediately. And the countries in the Middle East should really exert their efforts much more so that people in Gaza and Palestinians and Israel can live side by side in peace and security.
That's my latest interview with Ban Ki-moon, chairman of the World Forum for Asia and the former Secretary General of the United Nations. This is World Insight, still to come. A business outlook on Asia from a top executive from one of the world's largest petrochemical producers, SABIC CEO, next.
Ever wondered what's actually going on in Africa through the perspective of an African? How are things really going between China and Africa? What's the narrative of this relationship? Well, get a perspective with China-Africa Talk. Hear from African diplomats, entrepreneurs, academics, Chinese natives, and more. Get on our wavelength every week to find out what's real with China-Africa Talk. Find us on your favorite podcast. We'll see you there.
Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Welcome back. This is World Insight. I'm Tian Wei. Despite uncertainties, the Asian economy has kept a relatively high growth rate. Foreign firms continue to view China as a favored investment destination, driven by the country's steadfast commitment to opening up and innovation. One of them is the Saudi Arabia Basic Industries Corporation, or SABIC. It's one of the world's largest petrochemical producers based in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Asia has been one of SABIC's most profitable regions and largest sales market. On the World Forum sidelines, I talked to the CEO of SABIC, who is also the executive member of the board of directors. Let's listen to our conversation. Mr. Al-Faghi, what a pleasure to see you.
Pleasure to see you too, thank you.
This is your home turf, I mean, Boao Forum, isn't
That's
it? You frequent
absolutely,
this place.
Absolutely.
Tell me more about your take on China's new quality productive forces. How do you see that is providing more opportunities for your company to work with your Chinese partnership?
Excellent. First of all, I'm very happy to be here in this beautiful island, Hainan. This is one of the prettiest and great, you know, islands in the world that, you know, have the Bois for more than 20 years. This is a real demonstration of collaboration that can do a better for the business, as well as it's proved that it is a great platform for engagement, for business discussion and improvement for state leaders, business leaders, and etc. So now China for SABIC is a strategic region, and we've been in China for more than 40 years. We started in the last 40 years as product distributors of our chemical and polymers products. But then we keep transforming in China as we go in our journey with China, and we get trusted company that now we invest in China, and we have heavily invested in China. And with the recent announcement that we have done in Tianjin with the our expansion of polycarbonate within SSTBC with our partner Sinovic, that we have produced a world-class polycarbonate. I think it's the largest capacity from one train in China. Then we, in February this year, we have also announced the one of the largest ethylene cracker in the Gulei Park and the for SABIC Fujian. And I think this is a clear trust of SABIC to invest in China.
Right. I understand you were making your trip to China already on the very first day, right after the Chinese Lunar New Year to China.
That's
to
absolutely.
Go to inspect the latest development of the Fujian complex over there.
Absolutely.
So tell me more as to how much do you see is there for potential, you know, research, technology-wise, to cooperate with China. How will that further flourish? Well, you see there is tremendous opportunities.
Excellent. Actually, as you may know, I mean, China, I mean, represent more than 40% of the world demand in chemicals.
Yes.
I mean, this is large, this is huge. It is not only this. I mean, it is a country that also encouraged the foreign investment, encouraged the partnership, and that's why we are here, because of those encouragement, those incentives that we have received from the government in expanding our business here in China. And by the way, we are not here only to produce or to distribute products. We are here to act as a Chinese company. Then we care about our people. We care about the innovation and technology, as you have mentioned. We last year in August 2023, we celebrated the 10th anniversary for our research and innovation and technology here in China, in Shanghai. And that was the base that will help our customers, our business partners, and improve and grow. And we technically support them in all the innovation that we have created, because we have more than 10,000 patents in chemical processes. And that's more than 10,000 patents around the world that will help our customers here to grow and to have a better business.
You are also bringing on board some other international companies such as Microsoft to work with you on some of the sustainable products like the computer mouse or something.
Yeah, definitely. SABIC since day one, by the way, this is not something new for us.
I know.
SABIC since day one, we started as a sustainable company. We care about the climate. We started in Saudi Arabia in the late 70s, early 80s by collecting all these flare gases and make sure that we protect the environment and we will produce sustainable products.
Yeah.
Also in SABIC, we care about sustainability and our carbon footprint, whether we have very clear strategy and how to reduce our carbon footprint around the globe. And I can tell you, last year we had reduced about 12.5% in our carbon emission based in 2010. This is something, and we are aiming to reduce 20% by the 2030, neutral by 2050. And we try with our customers, also with our brand owners, to make sure that we promote the circular carbon economy. Circular carbon economy, this is something that encourage the recycle of the waste plastic and make sure that we bring a good material that can also help you know, not only SABIC, but the total business community.
The numbers you give one after another, even though they sound abstract, but there are a lot of efforts, I understand, put into it in order to make them happen.
Definitely.
And on the other hand, you're also working proactively on artificial intelligence.
Yes.
For example, something called the AI-powered virtual experimentation platform.
Yes.
Tell me more about it and how you are going to tap into the potential. What does that mean for an industry like yours? I'm very curious about
Look, I mean, the artificial intelligence is something that has to be obtained and it has to be developed. And we in SABIC, we believe that the artificial intelligence can help a lot. And we started, by the way, in our manufacturing facilities by adopting some of these artificial intelligence and helping us in testing and maintenance and also in operations. And we think that also it eased the business. So these artificial intelligence that we have developed, and we have developed a lot of in-house, yes, we can depend on some of the ready solutions and the artificial intelligence, but also we created a team in the company, very sophisticated team, global team, that we develop something internal to make sure that also we get our own artificial intelligence and also we get advantage of what is in the market.
So you are saying you are working with everyone, but at the same time, you want to also have your own independence approach, cater to your own business potential.
Definitely. And we can see that we have a great people within the company, that they have a lot of good ideas in how to solve some of the challenges that we have in the business.
Yeah. Like what? Give me an example.
You know, how to sell your product, for example. I mean, we have created the platforms in our company internally. It helps us on how to solve our problems and how to reach to the market quickly, and also how to optimize in our operations, because we have so many processes and so many operations around the globe, starting from the feedstock to the operations, to the supply chain, to the supply of the customers, and also to do the technical services. You know, the artificial intelligence help us to do the optimization for all of our processes. And it is very complicated, especially when it comes to the manufacturing, because it has so many variables there, that this artificial intelligence help us in how to do a better optimization for our processes.
With your track record, there will be enormous amount of data that you have, particularly working with your partners around the world in your industry. That would probably help artificial intelligence to develop in your industry.
Definitely.
To be the front runner.
I hope so, but I can tell you that the big data help us mainly in our processes, in our manufacturing, in our production facilities.
I see.
Because it's collect all the data about all of equipment, all of these processes, and it is anticipated, you know, when is the right time for do maintenance, when is the right time to do to change catalyst and all these things.
Yes. My final question for you, sir.
Please.
You are not only a business leader of your own company, but also one that is leading B20.
Yes.
This is a very important business community leaders,
right,
providing advice to the leaders of the G20,
right,
which is a combination of both developed and the developing world.
Right.
Now, we are in a very complex situation of the world, and also fragmentation, elections going on during the year. Technology is developing so fast. AI is one of them. Governance, technology, encouragement, how to do it. So what do you see as the core for this year as the B20 leader?
Excellent question. By the way, I was honored, I mean, to lead the business community of Saudi Arabia during the B20 presidency in India, and also this year during the presidency of Brazil. I'm also leading the Saudi, you know, businessmen and women, to make sure that we are part of the B20 community.
Yeah.
And we, as a business leaders, we try to advocate for free trades among all the countries.
Mm-hmm.
We try to advocate for the collaboration, and we try to advocate for the partnership. Because one of the things that we discuss, for example, is the climate change. The climate change, it has to be global collaboration and partnership, because you cannot do it in one part of the world without the other one. You cannot set up policies in one country or one region and forget what the others. Asia, for example, is an important to determine what is those policies and, you know, guidelines for the climate change. So we try as a business community to bring our views together, to collaborative together, and then bring our views to the leaders to take the right decisions.
I guess it takes a lot of brave business leaders like you to provide the sufficient advice to the political leaders. There are things they really need to do.
We try to do our best collaboratively.
Good to see you, sir. All the best.
Good to see you, and thank you very much.
Dive into news like never before with Deep Dive, the podcast from CGTN Radio. join our global reporters for captivating stories and thought-provoking conversations. Search Deep Dive on your favorite podcast platforms and get ready to dive in.
Hello, I'm Tian Wei. Welcome to World Insight. On China-U.S. relations, earlier I interviewed the president of National Committee of U.S.-China Relations, Stephen Orlins. He has been talking about how could the two nations work more closely on common interests and how are business leaders digesting changes and keeping trade and investment vibrant. Here is my exclusive interview with him. A larger group of American business community representatives coming to Beijing. What are some of the messages you are getting from them? What do you think they are trying to convey here?
Well, I think they're trying to learn. There's great concern in the U.S. business community about China's economy, about the investment environment, about should they be expanding. These are most of the companies that are coming are already here. They're not companies that are considering coming to China. They're already here in a big way, and they need to decide, do I want to increase investment? So they need to hear from the senior levels of the Chinese government. What are they going to do to deal with some of the issues that foreign businesses are confronting? What is the future of the Chinese economy? What levels of growth are we going to see? What levels of consumer spending? So they're really coming to understand rather than convey a message.
I understand that there are some kinds of surveillance even toward the American business community about their investment in China. Going on in Washington, D.C., at least discussions about that. So how do you see the best way for them, I mean the American business community, to figure out to address this divide between China and the U.S. when it comes to the government?
I think they need to speak out. I think businesses need to say, this is what is national security. What we do, maybe there's a tiny percentage of the companies that really touch on national security, but the overwhelming majority don't. And when the government asks them about their investment, they say, we think this is good for the company. We think it's good for America. One of the issues that's kind of become more salient over these years is people think investment in China is bad for America. Investment in China is good for America. It's good for American employment. It's good for American businesses. And what it does, and what I love to talk about, is how investment builds people-to-people bridges. I've always said trade is kind of like dating. You know, you sell, you kind of go home, you come back next year, maybe you have another date, maybe you don't. Investment is marriage. When you've put money, when a Chinese company puts money in the United States, when a U.S. company puts money in China, they are married to that. They have to figure out a way to make it work. And what I've noticed over these 45 years is the areas where Chinese invest in the United States, where Americans invest in China, are more pro-constructive engagement than other areas, because they've dealt with Americans, or in America, they've dealt with Chinese. So investment flows are very important for the people-to-people bridges that they build.
Semiconductors, for example, that the U.S. companies produce can sell to the Chinese market. Now, according to the latest rule from the U.S., it's limited in terms of the sophistication and the levels. So is this going to be a constructive move by the U.S. side? Shouldn't they be speaking out against this?
What we need is both sides to sit down and agree on a definition of what is national security. So not all AI relates to national security. Some does. Not all chips relate to national security. You know, some of it is for cancer research. Some of it, I mean, there's so many things, so many good things that it can affect. So we need, at a senior level, both sides to sit down and say, this is national security, and also at the same time say, this is whitelisted. This is stuff, I mean, stuff on climate change. We don't want to be limiting an interchange of either ideas or equipment that can help with climate change. That certainly is not a good thing. But what's happened now is both sides have kind of let national security expand. And it's expanded to the point where it really hurts the average Chinese and the average American. And that's kind of why I continue in my job, because I believe that that we need to take care of the peoples of China and the peoples of the United States, and a good, constructive relationship between the United States and China does that.
And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei here in Boao. On behalf of my team here and in Beijing, I'll see you tomorrow.